Hello and welcome to Redefined, your home for news about parental school choice and education reform.
If you don't mind, let me get to one of the hearts of the matter with this first question. So, you know, Representative Brandon, you're a proud progressive. I would say, and most people would say, you're a progressive's progressive. You know, you worked for Dennis Kucinich, you worked for Equality Virginia, you worked for a progressive majority, and yet, you know, you are also as strong a school choice supporter as you'll find anywhere. And I'm assuming that you see no ideological inconsistency there. So tell me why. I mean, why, in your view, is parental choice a progressive position?
Well, I always tell people that my views on education is the most progressive stance that I have. And I think that way because, you know, if you're looking at the definition, the very definition of what a progressive is and what we've always stood for was, you know, changing policies for the greater good. It is not progressive to do the same thing over and over again with outcomes that especially affect the least of these the most. It has always been mind-boggling to me of how we allow we've allowed these educational outcomes and these policies to go on for 40, 50 years, and then we say we're going to continue that, and then somebody says that's progressive. I don't know how, just the very definition of progressive, and even if you get into the political definition of progressive, it defies logic. And so progressive has got to take a real hard look at the way they view education, because I was always brought up in the civil rights movement and all of that, that, you know, you fight for equal opportunity and equal access for everybody. And if you have data that shows consistently that there is one particular segment of the population that doesn't do well under a system, well, that's not progressive. And if you continue that policy, it's actually regressive.
Okay, well, you touched on something that's a good segue, and that is the fact that, you know, you're just not a new progressive. Being progressive isn't new to you. In fact, it's something of a family tradition. I mean, on your bio, I know it says that, you know, your family was entrenched in the civil rights movement. So can you briefly talk to me about those roots and tell our readers and listeners about those roots?
Yeah, the roots are strong. You know, I come from a civil rights, I'm a descendant of the civil rights era. And my family, with the Greensboro sit-ins, which is known worldwide, which is where I grew up. My family was students at North Carolina A&T. My uncle led the sit-in movement and got a Civil Rights Medal of Honor for doing that. But like I said, ever since I could walk, I've been passing out flyers, knocking on doors, fighting for justice and equal opportunity and equal access. And I see my work at Carolina Can as a former legislator as absolutely nothing different from that. It seems like the fight is actually more civil rights than what I was even doing, you know, when I was younger, because I didn't quite get what they were doing because they didn't really affect me like that, because I didn't have to deal with segregation and sitting in the back of the bus and all of that. But I did, like, the fight that I'm in now seems deeper because it is a civil rights issue. You do have a system that creates these, or some are doing well and some are not. And it does depend on where you grow up and where you live, of what that educational outcome is.
Can you briefly describe some of what you've been through because of your positions on these issues?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very difficult thing because these are heroes of yours. These are people that you grew up, idolizing or, you know, thinking that, you know, and I still do. But on this issue, it was very difficult, and it was not pretty at first. It was things that I thought you only happened in the movies. So it was very hard discussions, very hard time in my life. It was very lonely.
When you say things that only happen in the movies, what do you mean? Can you give me some examples of what you had to deal with?
Well, just people coming in and yelling and screaming and threatening to get you out of office and to put you out of office and not allowing you to sit at their tables and really like an alienation type thing that that happened that I was not prepared for. I was not prepared for that. Things got much better later, but like as it, when I first started and I lifted the cap off of charter schools and then I supported the voucher bill, like it was some tough days and it was some tough conversations, not just by members of my not just by African American members, but really you get a lot of harsh rhetoric from progressives, extreme progressives, and who would never send their child to my school one day of the week. And this is why I have a problem with that. Instead, you know, like they're like, oh, keep your kids there, keep your kids there. But at the end of the day, they would never send their kids to my school, not right. one day of the week.
Right.
So we had to have those discussions. And like when people would yell at me, I remember being in a parade one time. And, you know, one progressive yelled at me and you're privatizing schools. And I asked her, would you send your kid to my school? And every time I ask that question, the conversation gets very silent.
Okay. Well, how did this happen in your view? I mean, how did we get to this kind of crazy alternate reality where so many people think, including many progressives, think that school choice and parental empowerment are somehow right-wing things?
Because it's about validation, right? And this is like a very hard conversation. But it is about validation. And what has happened over the years, and you've seen it in the report that the Washington Post did about charter schools and how they were all segregated and this, that, and the other. And people have made that claim. And what when I say validation, I mean is that there are people who believe, a lot of people believe that in order for it to be validated, then it has to have white people involved with it. And that is just simply not the case. Now, I grew up personally in a school where I was one of 12 black people out of, you know, an extreme minority. Like, I was an extreme minority. And that worked out for me, you know. And, you know, if I had my choice and druthers to do it again, I'd probably do it all again the same way. But, like, that's not the case for everybody, and that's why you have choice. But at the end of the day, when I'm talking about validation is that, like, we have fell into a mindset of we have to have anything that we do validated by people who do not look like us. And so what happens is that, like, the teachers union or other people end up taking over this conversation, and they've done a great job of doing that for the last 50 years. And so we let them lead on that issue. And also, we've gotten into the, you know, school choice is not new for African Americans. You want to talk about roots and history. This is how most of these people who are opposed to it were educated, was
right.
through a choice education and through alternative education. Like, and so it is a part, very much a part of our history for the community to be involved with the school. It's very much a part of our history for the churches to start their own school. That's as just as deep as our history as any part of our history. So we've always had that this is a part of our history. And it mind boggles me how we, the people who are fighting this, forget that. One thing that I have a hard time with these conversations is that, like, it's being labeled a segregationist or things like that. And I'm not a segregationist. I'm a community person. And there are communities that are all black, and it's going to take all black people to deal. Like, it's just that's just the way you have to deal with it. If it's an all black community, well, the community fix certainly sounds, you know, Afrocentric, but, like, it has to be because that is the community. But if I was representing or, you know, when I'm talking to, like, the other week I went to Wellington, North Carolina, where that's predominantly white, so you have that, and you encourage them to do the same thing, and it's not segregating, it's just what the community looks like and how the community has to fix it. And so what we have is we have a lot of African-American communities led by African-American leaders, and if you build that capacity, we can make amazing inroads on poverty and education. But if we continue to let people lead it who are not from that community, we're not going to make progress.
Well,
because it's not their focus. It's not, and it shouldn't be their focus, right, because they have their own constituents.
Well, let me ask you this one last thing, and I so appreciate your patience and the fact you've taken so much time with me to here today. Yeah. So your work now with Carolina Can, I mean, that's not just all about school choice. That's about public schools and improving public schools.
Right.
So, I find that interesting because, you know, as you know, oftentimes school choice supporters are pigeonholed into being this either-or group, you know, that favors private schools and is slamming on public schools. Clearly, right, your position now with Carolina Can shows that not to be the case.
Right, and it's never been the case, really. I've spent just as much time because 90% of my kids are going to go to a traditional public school. It doesn't make sense at all for me to concentrate on anything other than that, mostly, right? So, like, if you do get pigeonholed, but the truth is that I spend probably, and even in the legislature, most of the laws that we are passing, most of the bills that we're doing, and most of the budget that we're approving are for traditional public schools, 90% of it, right? So, even the voucher program was $10 million. It's not even 1% of the budget for education, right?
Right.
So, like,
right,
it's not even close to my, it's not, alternative schools are a option, and because of the position that I am as an executive director, I represent all schools. This is the way I look at it. All my babies go to schools, all of them. And I think it's disingenuous for progressives and others to make this adversarial and an either or. Because what you're saying is that there are kids over here that we need to pay attention to, but there are kids over here that we don't need to pay attention to. And I think that is a horrible position to take. Whether your constituency is in a charter school, or they're a private school, or they're a home school, or they're in the traditional public school, you have a constitutional responsibility to represent all of them. And it shouldn't take a constitutional responsibility to feel that way. You should want to represent all the schools in your district. You should want to make sure that policy makes sure all kids are learning at the highest level. And the only real adversarial conversation is good schools versus bad schools. That's it. Like, it's not, you know, public versus private versus virtual versus home. It's just a very simple conversation.
Okay.
Good versus bad.
Well, hey, Representative Brandon, that makes a lot of sense to me. Well, thank you so much for taking all this time out for me.
Not a problem. Thank you.